We'll look at Tony Romo's Hall of Fame resume and where his retirement leaves the poor, poor Houston Texans. Plus, some talk of the heir apparent for Drew Brees and Carson Palmer and the truth behind developmental quarterbacks and a scorching hot take on the best team in the NFC. All that on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. Here with Andy Benoit, we have football things to talk about. And, well, the number one thing we're going to talk about, Tony Romo. Tony Romo is retired, or perhaps quote-unquote retired. But let's throw out the scenario, Andy, that Tony Romo is not going to play again. Do you think Tony Romo is a Hall of Famer?
Oh, that is a ton. I love that we're starting here. And that's a tough one for me. I think he was as good, if you just watch him on the field and the way he plays, take the stats out, take the records out, which we'll talk about in a second, I assume. I think he looks as good as anyone in the Hall of Fame, or almost anyone in the Hall of Fame. He's as good of a player as a lot of those guys. I'm not sure the resume will translate well 5 years from now. You know, Gary, his playoff record is 2-4, and that will come up in that meeting room when they get together to talk about who goes into Canton.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's not, the narrative was always the late game thing. Oh, Tony Romo's a choker. That really didn't hold up over time. That might have held up in 2008 or something, but he reversed that. That was not really an issue. I think the lack of playoff victories keeps him out. I think Tony Romo had a wonderful career, and I think maybe if he does come back and he has some good year or two, with a new team, I think maybe we can revisit this. Well, we would definitely revisit it, but I really did not think he had much of a chance. I think when you're a quarterback and you have, two playoff victories?
Yep.
I don't think you can get in unless you were, a guy who won MVPs. And I'm not sure Romo was ever
No.
He was always a very good quarterback. I don't think he was ever like a top five guy league-wide.
I agree. And there's no, I mean, that's a respectable career still. There's no shame
Absolutely.
At all. And being a very good quarterback for a long time. You know what? I had my researchers look this up today, Gary. How many quarterbacks do you think since 2006, which was Romo's first season starting, I believe, that's the year he took over for Bledsoe midway through. Mm-hmm. And so he won't be part of this equation, but how many quarterbacks that have been drafted since 2006 would you guess have gone on to start 48 games, which is three full seasons worth of games?
48 games total?
Yes, for the team that drafted him.
Oh, for the team that drafted him?
Even just 48 games total, it doesn't have to be the team that drafted him. Quarterbacks drafted at all since 2006 to start three seasons worth of NFL games.
I will say 11.
Well, I'm surprised. It's 15, and there's 10 of them who are still starters. The other five are backups or washed out of the league. I'm surprised you guessed right on. I would have guessed that number to be 30, 35 since 2006. I mean, that's a whole generation of quarterbacks.
So
15 of them have become actual starters.
It's 10 years, and the number is low, and I guess low because I picked up on the context clues, Andy. I'm good like that.
Yeah, I kind of led you to it a little bit there.
I'm a regular Encyclopedia Brown.
Yeah, you had some lines to read between for me there.
But no, it's 10 years. Quarterbacks generally last 10 years. If you draft a good quarterback, he's going to be your quarterback for a decade. Hopefully, that's the way it worked. I mean, we might be talking about Ryan Tannehill as like a 10-year guy in a couple of years here, the way it's going. But this is actually, I had this conversation with a former MMQB-er the other day when we were talking a little bit of Romo. He thought
Why
Romo.
Why are you being vague? How many former MMQBers are? Is that Greg Bedard? I mean,
it is not. Yeah, there's actually
only one.
I believe there is only one former MMQBer who is in the building. And surely as a writer, I'm not surprised you said Greg Bedard because you writers are so vain. You only think of yourselves. You don't think of the people behind the scenes, like Tom Mantzoranis, who is now a SI video maven. But he was the guy I replaced when
okay.
he
well,
when
Tom,
he left
yeah,
MMQB.
I remember. Tom was here the first year we did MMQB.
There you go. So that very
right,
very
so it was Tom.
Very
it was
thoughtless
not
of you to not realize he had left. But I bumped into him and we were talking a little bit of Romo, and he thinks Romo at this moment, if Philip Rivers also retired today, he thinks Romo has the better chance at the Hall of Fame. And I said, the guys, they have very similar resumes as far as the lack of postseason success, but I think Rivers was just the better quarterback throughout his career. I don't know if there was ever a time where I would have said, right now, Tony Romo is better than Philip Rivers.
There was, I know people within the NFL, highly respected people, who feel that Rivers is the better quarterback than Eli Manning, who's going to clearly be a Hall of Famer with two rings and a marquee franchise for many years. So I'm with you on Rivers better than Romo. I think it's close. I think Philip Rivers is a much better quarterback. He's going to go down underrated in history. There's no way history is going to rate him as good as he as a player he is, because the end results and the circumstances he's been in have not matched his high level of play.
Yeah. No, I think he's going to be a fascinating case when he retires. But yeah, I really did not think Romo had much of a chance at the Hall of Fame. I think he's a great guy. I think he had a very good career, and I think there's some sentiment right now saying, let's put this guy in the Hall of Fame. But I don't think this isn't baseball where they eventually put everyone in. I don't think Romo gets in.
Yeah, and Rivers, just for the record, is 4-5 in the playoffs. And remember, those playoff 500's not a bad playoff record, because everyone's going to lose
good
a playoff
teams.
Game except one guy each year.
Exactly. I mean, you play good teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Related to Romo here, it looked like Houston was going to be the landing spot, and it looked like Houston wanted him, and we don't have to speculate about why or why he wouldn't want to play for the Texans, but the bottom line is, right now, the Houston Texans don't have a quarterback, and yet they have, this is a Super Bowl caliber team otherwise at every other spot on the roster. I would love to see Jay Cutler in Houston. One,
That's
because
what
I think
Jay,
I think Jay Cutler is... I think good Jay Cutler is a good quarterback, and I realize you don't always get good Jay Cutler. Sometimes you get bad Jay Cutler. But there's no other option out there right now is another thing. And I'd also, from like a voyeuristic standpoint here, I'd love to see how Bill O'Brien and Jay Cutler get along.
Well, Cutler's not a screamer. And so you're not going to get a repeat of the Brady Bill O'Brien thing, which I YouTubed again a few weeks ago just to watch, just for entertainment. You're not going to get that. Cutler will just shrug and turn his back on you. That's his demeanor. I'm not saying that's what he would absolutely do. O'Brien's a little feistier. I am with you. I want to see Cutler to Houston only because Houston does have a Super Bowl caliber defense without question. Probably will be the best defense in the NFL this season with Merciless, Clowney, and J.J. Watt now.
Yeah.
And they need a quarterback. What concerns, and they need a quarterback who can win right now. If they don't feel Tom Savage can be a caretaker right now, then they need to find a guy that they think can. They cannot afford to develop a quarterback on the fly here, because your Super Bowl windows do not stay open. My concern about Cutler in Houston, and he's probably the best of bad options, because the other guy you would sign is Fitzpatrick, and he's Ryan Fitzpatrick. You have the same concern with him. It's what kind of decision maker would he be if they're going to ask him to do a bunch of option routes, where in Houston the receivers run their patterns based on the defensive look a lot of the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. So your quarterback and receiver need to be on the exact same page with what they're seeing. It's not something you just develop overnight. They still have young, unrefined receivers. Cutler has never been a particularly disciplined quarterback, and I think he can read the field, but I don't think he's a good field reader. So I don't know if it's a perfect marriage, but there are no good solutions out there right now.
Yeah, there's really not. And again, we talked draft quarterbacks a little more in depth last week, but there's no one in the draft you can pluck out and say we're going to stick him there. So you can't even make a Rams or Eagles type of trade up here and get a guy who's going to come in and do some stuff for you in all likelihood. I mean,
Gary, here's how you know The draft is a tough one because I have studied the draft quarterbacks now. I got done doing a project there. I spoke with Greg Cosell at NFL Films at length about all these guys as part of the research. Greg's been watching these guys transfer to the NFL for many years, so I adhere to his opinion. I told him Bruce Arians, I believe, said last week or sometime recently that there's only one quarterback, in his opinion, who has a chance to step in and start right away. And Greg and I could not figure out who Arians thought that was. And if there's only one of those guys and two people that watch every NFL snap or close to it, and one of those people does this draft stuff as well, and Cosell for many years, if we can't tell who the guy is, there's no one in this draft worth taking a significant chance on at the quarterback position.
Yeah. And we'll transition a little bit here because I want to talk about two teams that don't need quarterbacks in 2017, but probably will need quarterbacks in the very near future, 18 or 19. Drew Brees in New Orleans and Carson Palmer with the Cardinals. These are two teams. They've been linked to, obviously, all these guys, like we said, are developmental guys in this year's draft. But, Saints and Cardinals have been linked to them. So I'll start with this. We'll start with Brees. Realistically, how much longer could you see Drew Brees playing at a high level?
Well, the tricky part is his arm strength has already declined a lot, and that's what you worry about with a quarterback. Now, so his arm strength has declined. He's not the same thrower of the football, and yet the Saints finished with one of the league's most prolific offenses once again, and Breeze's numbers were huge like they always are, and you really couldn't tell a huge difference with that team. So what do we take from that? Does that mean Breeze, it's going to go bad at any second because it very well could? Or does it mean it's not going to go bad because it already has gone bad, his arm's not what it was, and he's still efficient and effective? And I don't know the answer to that. He's not going to play forever because nobody does, nobody ever has. But whatever you're worried about with Drew Brees and aging, it's already begun. And yet here we are, and he's still an effective quarterback.
Yeah, I mean they drafted sort of a developmental QB of the future guy. They took Garrett Grayson with a top 75 pick a couple years ago, and I'm always kind of surprised. I have no idea if Garrett Grayson could play right now, and nobody outside of that building does. But I'm always a little bit surprised that the discussion is always, well, Saints got to get their next guy in there, and it's like, well,
yeah,
didn't they?
I'm starting. Right. I'm starting to think this developmental QB thing is nonsense. The only way I stumbled on that stat of how many QBs that have been drafted since 2006 have become starters for 3 years? I stumbled upon it because I was looking into how many guys have actually been developmental QBs, meaning since 2006, how many guys have been drafted, have sat out and learned the ropes for at least one season, and then gone on to start for their next team. And how many guys would you think have started 30 games after sitting out their rookie years for the teams that drafted them?
I would say very low based on the way you asked that question. So I'll say four.
It's three. So three times in the last 10 years total in the whole NFL, a guy has been drafted, has sat and learned on the bench, and then become the starter. And guess who the three guys are? One is Chad Henne, who's no longer with the team he did that for. That was Miami. The other's Kaepernick. He's not a 49er anymore. And the third one's Kirk Cousins. And the plan was not to have Cousins learn the ropes. He was drafted as a long-term backup to Robert Griffin, and it just happened to work out differently. So really, you could say, for all intents and purposes, because of the way Henne's career's gone and Kaepernick's, you could say that it doesn't happen at all in the NFL. Nobody drafts and sits a guy for a year and then gets him. Now, Carson Palmer did it. Aaron Rodgers did it. Romo did it as an undrafted guy. That was a generation ago. That was before 2006. So they used to do it, and we knew that. But the evidence even says unequivocally teams absolutely do not do that anymore.
I think it sort of begs the question, why don't teams do that anymore? I mean, the new thing is, you take your guy in the first round, you have to play him. Oh, you took him in the first round, you have to get that guy out there. And we talked a little bit about it last week, but like you said, I mean, the list of guys, like you said, Rodgers and Brady and Brees and all these elite quarterbacks, Philip Rivers, Tony Romo, all these guys sat early in their career, and no one's willing to do that with their quarterbacks anymore.
And I think the practice time's a big factor of that, don't you?
Yeah, but...
You don't have as many hours, not even close. You have about half the number of hours that you're allowed to practice on the field now as you did 10 plus years ago.
But you
and
would
so
think...
when do you get the guys, when do you get the guys, if they're sitting and learning, when are they actually practicing and getting reps?
Yeah, but you would think that also kind of works the other way, because you would say, well, we have less practice time, therefore we have less time to develop the guy, so we have need to stretch this out. You know, we need to stretch this process out for another year or two.
I think what happens is they say, we have less practice time. We have Jared Goff, for example. Well, we need to get him some reps. Well, if he's going to get reps, he's got to take reps with the first team, because that's all we have time to practice. And now all of a sudden, bam, Jared Goff's your starting quarterback.
It's unfortunate. I'll say this about this draft, and then we'll move on to Carson Palmer. I think there's a happy little confluence of events of scenarios here that I think is gonna fit nicely and make everybody happy on draft day. I think you're gonna see some teams at the top of the draft who need quarterbacks who end up not taking them in the top 10, but trading back up into the first round where they can get these guys, and they can get the fifth year option is locked in once you use a first round pick on a guy. So I think some of the bad teams in the league will do that, and then the good teams who don't need quarterbacks drafting at the end of the first round, they are all too happy to move down and pick up extra picks because this draft is tremendously deep.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be very kumbaya. Everyone's going to be very, very happy. The draft grades will be fantastic. Everyone will have an A this year.
Oh, good. That's the important thing too, is the draft grades. I always like to see ideas pulled out of thin air and put onto paper, and especially when they're categorized like that.
I think I'm going to give out a lot of check pluses this year.
There you go. Yeah. I would think there'll be a run on quarterbacks. When one starts to go, the others will follow. Because having studied these guys now, they're all so close, and it's just going to – none of them are even remotely close to ready to run an NFL offense, because the other thing we haven't talked a whole lot about, although we do touch on it at times on this show, is that the college game and the pro game are differing, and they're becoming further and further apart. And the reason why, it gets back to the lack of practice time, so you're only able to do so much at each level. And then college is so different because of the hash marks on the field. The field is wider, essentially, with the way teams formation and line up. That changes your play designs. It changes the coverages you get. And so that's why it's a crapshoot to try to figure out who's a good pro quarterback versus college quarterback, or vice versa, because they're such different games. So they're very – we go over it every week, I feel like, but they're very different games, and now they both have very limited hours that you can practice. NCAA limitations, collective bargaining, NFL limitations, and so the quarterbacks just aren't coming from anywhere or going anywhere. And I don't think any of these guys are ready to plug in now because of all these things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you set the over-under at 3.5 quarterbacks in the first round of this draft, I would take the over. I think there's going to be 4, and I think Davis Webb might sneak in there too. I think that's going to be the scenario. I think teams are going to sneak back into the first round to get these guys and get them on the 5-year deals here.
And if it were last year's draft with those quarterbacks that they had, especially Wentz and Goff mainly we're talking about, then all these guys that we're talking today, this year's guys, are all second rounders or later. There are no blue chip first rounders. They might go in the first round because of the position they play in the scarcity, but they're not first round talents compared to previous drafts.
Yeah. All right, Andy, hang on 1 second before we move on here. You know, one of the cooler stories we ever did at the MMQB was about the NFL's obsession with sleep. Basically, every good veteran player around the league swears by sleep now. Guys like Brandon Marshall, Adam Vinatieri, they basically say, I'm in bed every night at 9 o'clock. That's why I can play at this level in the league at my age. And, well, you can't get a good night's sleep without the right mattress, so I want to tell you about Casper Mattresses. They had an in-house team of engineers spend literally thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that's got just the right combination of sink and bounce. Plus, breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. Now, Casper is one of the most popular mattresses on the internet here, one of the favorites. Average review of 4.8 stars, that's between Amazon, Google, and Casper's own site. Here's the good stuff, though. Free shipping to the U.S. and Canada, pretty good. But on top of that, try Casper for 100 nights risk-free. That's 100 nights in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund everything to you. Personally, my favorite thing about the Casper mattress is it folds in this little box, and it's science. It's just amazing science. The box is something that should not be able to hold a mattress in it. It's like the size of like a small dog or something. But it's amazing stuff. It's all designed, developed, and assembled in the USA. All right, and here's, I guess, the even better than the best part. You can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/MMQB and using the promo code MMQB. Again, that's $50 toward any mattress purchase. Just go to casper.com/MMQB and use that promo code. Terms and conditions apply. Please support them the way they support our show. Well, as I promised, let's talk about Carson Palmer, too. What does Carson Palmer have left in the tank based on what you saw in 2016 and what was a pretty disappointing year for the Cardinals?
Yeah, it was a very disappointing year. And Palmer's a tougher one to figure out. You know, when a quarterback has an injury on his hand, in Palmer's case, I believe it was a pinky, wasn't it? It was one of his fingers. That's going to factor. I mean, it just will. You're throwing a football. So I don't know where he is. It was not a good season. It was discouraging on a number of fronts. It impacted Palmer's play in a lot of different directions. He was not remotely close to the same quarterback that we've seen, but he was so good just 2 years ago that you have to give him the benefit of the doubt, because you'd hate to leave Carson Palmer of 2015. If there's any of that guy left, you'd hate to leave that on the table, especially with the offense you have around them. They have the best running back in the NFC, and if everyone's healthy, and that's an if, but if they get that receiving core healthy, it might be the best receiving core in the NFC.
Yeah, that is a big if. I think Arizona finds their guy in this draft too, and we'll see how it goes, because they brought in Logan Thomas, and that didn't work out. I don't know. It seems like whenever Palmer has been hurt, the downgrade has been so severe with the guy they brought off the bench. No one's even shown sort of emerged as like a maybe option for down the line.
Well, Arizona's offense is tough. So it is the classic pro offense. Deeper dropbacks, 5-step timing, 7-step timing. A lot of times all 5 receivers are out running routes, so minimum protection. Yeah, that puts a lot of stress on a quarterback. It also means he's got a lot to read and a lot of more variables to consider. 5 guys to throw to instead of 3 or 4 guys. So it's not an offense you can just plug in and play a guy in. That's part of the reason Cosell and I couldn't figure out who Arians thinks could be the rookie that could play right away. Because presumably Arians is looking at who could run his offense right away. That's how coaches see the game. We guessed DeShone Kizer, but that's a guess. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy offense to learn or execute there in Arizona. It's why they need a veteran type of quarterback to do it.
Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk a little Denver Broncos here, because the Broncos, if you believe the media, this is where Tony Romo wanted to go. He wanted to be the Cowboys quarterback, but considering Dak Prescott is there, his choice seemed to be Denver. And the Broncos really... publicly and as far as we can tell privately, they weren't terribly interested. It looks like they have their 2 young guys. They have Trevor Siemian. They have Paxton Lynch, who was a first-round pick a year ago, who is certainly a physical specimen, but very far from a finished product. It looks like they're just going to ride with those 2 guys. And like we talked with the Texans, this is an elite defense. This is a Super Bowl-caliber team outside of the quarterback. But I wanted to, assuming they ride with these 2 quarterbacks, I want to talk a little bit of offensive line here, because I think more than anything, you probably, when you step back and you look at the Broncos 2016 season, you say, this is probably what they should have expected from Trevor Siemian, from a talent standpoint. This is probably wasn't surprising to them, but what was surprising was this run game just never got going.
It did not. And that was the problem. It was a run-based offense. Trevor Siemian was not the reason they struggled on offense this season. Now, he wasn't the type of quarterback that could overcome a bad running game. He couldn't carry the offense when, I guess in theory, he had to, when the running game wasn't working. But that was never their approach. They were never counting on him to do that. The running game was the issue. You know, Gary, they have in Denver, they have a little over $16 million in cap space, which sounds like a lot, but keep in mind you have to sign your draft class still, mm-hmm. so it's not a ton of cap space. So you factor that in, and you look at Romo's injury concerns, which I think has gotten overlooked, and maybe the Broncos feel like, well, that's a big risk we're taking to get Tony Romo, and it comes at the expense of cultivating the young QBs we already have here, which we know more about. We know more about Trevor Siemian than we do about Tony Romo. You know, I'm not as shocked that Denver didn't want Romo as I think on the surface a person should be, and as I would have guessed I would have been before I thought it out further. I think they're fine with these young QBs. They're complementary players anyway, and their team is relatively set right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, based on what you saw from Lynch last year, I mean, how long are we talking
here?
Well,
he's another one of those young guys. He's going to be the guy they hope that bucks the trend of everything we're talking about, which is you can't sit and develop guys on the bench, or nobody does that. Lynch needed that. They knew he'd needed that coming out of Memphis. The Memphis football offices were probably telling the Broncos he'll need to sit and wait. So that's I wouldn't evaluate Paxton Lynch based on what we saw last year, other than maybe looking at the physical skill set. And the physical skill set is pretty impressive.
He's awesome, yeah. Yeah, he is he's just so giant. He's just one of those guys who looks – like I would say when I watch Cam Newton, it looks like he's I don't know if he did this as a kid. Like you go and play home run derby on the Little League field so that you know you can muscle it over the 200-foot wall.
Oh yeah,
and it looks like that. He looks like he's playing on a field that is too small for his size.
Yep, he does. And I'll be interested to see how this training camp battle plays out, because you don't get two young quarterbacks generally battling like this. Siemian's still a very unfinished product as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. In fact, the last time we saw it was probably Robert Griffin and Kirk Cousins, and that was never really a pure competition because there was always Griffin either was the guy because of where he was drafted, or he had an injury factor.
Yep. If you're Denver, though, I mean, you're probably looking offensive line, maybe tight end, but got to be looking offensive line in the first round of the draft this year.
I would think so. They're okay inside with Max Garcia and Ronald Leary at guard. Now, those guys are average, but we remember what we said last week. Average is average. Average doesn't mean you're bad. It means you're average. It can be good enough. Matt Paradis at center, very good movable center, on the move type of blocker. Not good in a phone booth, though, and that can be a problem at times. Teams will even switch to a 3-4 front just to get Paradis in a phone booth, get him battling nose tackles. So I would think if they do want to go offensive line, Gary, they would draft one of the tackles. Donald Stevenson and Menelik Watson are their current tackles, two extremely talented guys, and they've been extremely talented back and forth fringe starters for about 5 years apiece now.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a team that has their quarterback of the future. That is Carson Wentz, who is pretty tremendous, and now he will have guys to throw to. I did want to talk a little about the Eagles up front, though, because, you know, they have some questions at running back. They had questions at wide receiver, but adding Alshon Jeffrey and, you know, you would disagree with me, Torrey Smith. I like Torrey Smith because he's fast. He runs fast. If you're going to be one thing, just be a guy who runs fast downfield, and that's a skill set that's usable in the NFL. But
yeah. Hey, can I interrupt you on something there real quick?
Yeah.
I got kind of a funny side story about that. When I was doing something with Jamal Adams a few weeks ago, the LSU safety, and I was flying from North Carolina and Charlotte. I had just done Mitchell Trubisky film room. We'll have it out at some point on MMQB. I was flying from Charlotte to Baton Rouge. It was late at night. And about a year ago, I started wearing sweatpants when I travel. Because it's more comfortable. And I got stuck on, in fact, it was after our MMQB holiday party, going back home to Boise, we were flying for 23 hours because of snowstorms. Oh. And I had my sweatpants on. I was so grateful because I didn't have to deal with discomfort all day. Now, I looked like garbage. My family was ashamed, but it was worth it. I thought, you know what? This is worth it. And so I'm now a sweatpants traveler. And my thinking is I'll just never see anyone I know. Since I started wearing sweatpants when I travel, I have now seen NFL people on 4 of my last 5 trips. I never saw a single NFL guy in an airport before. And my last one, that one in Charlotte, when I'm in my sweatpants, I saw Press Taylor, the Eagles' young assistant QB coach, who I think is going to be a tremendous coach that everybody's going to know in a few years. He and I really enjoy speaking. And, of course, actually, I didn't see him. He saw me. He saw me in the sweatpants. But I asked him, you know, hey, Torrey, I said,
who's that a-hole in the sweatpants?
Yeah, he called me out. I thought, oh, no, someone called my name out. There's no way someone in Charlotte knows my name unless they are part of football or you know, that's not good. It's not like it's going to be a hometown Boise person that I can just shrug off and, oh, well, they know me. So it was Press Taylor. I was embarrassed. I commented on the sweatpants. But the main point, this was very we took the long way home on this story. I said, Press, honestly, you know, Torrey Smith, you don't think he can run a route tree for you guys and work within the context of your offense? And he said, you know, he doesn't know about Smith like that. You got to wait till you see him. But his overriding point was just having that fast guy, we can build our routes around that fast guy still. Maybe he's a limited receiver. Maybe he is a little stiff. We'll find out. But we know he's fast, and the safety still has to account for him. And as long as we know what the safety's doing, then our other receivers become easier to use. And so it made me rethink my Torrey Smith spot just a little bit. I know, you know, Press is going to say good things about Smith because they just signed him. But it made me rethink it just a little bit. And I'm still wearing sweatpants, by the way. The odds are I'm not going to keep seeing these NFL guys.
I have two responses. One, I'm a little bit angry that you didn't take my word for that. I mean, what? Just because I've never coached or played in the NFL, my opinion carries no value to you, Andy? Because I said the same thing about Torrey Smith. Just be fast.
Yeah, you did. But this, that never coaching or having never played, that does factor in a little bit. At least when we're talking about the other guy being a coach.
I'm not particularly knowledgeable, but still, I said that thing, and sometimes I'm going to be right. And my second point is, all the best parts of the show have to do with sweatpants. I think we've learned that over the years. We're going to have to add a sweatpants.
Yeah, we have. Segment. We learned that the easy way and the hard way at times.
So, I can remember. Oh, Eagles. So, I actually wanted to talk about. I want to talk about the Eagles' offensive line here, and particularly Jason Peters, because it feels like that's sort of the next. That's the next thing they have to address here. They have the quarterback. They are restocking some dynamic receivers, which is something they lost during the Chip Kelly years when he sort of brought in some sort of slow-mo guys. But like Jason Peters, great player for so many years. He's kind. I don't want to say done, but I also want to say done.
I'm in that same boat, and actually to just. Talking to other Eagles coaches, because there's more than just Press Taylor that I've seen, and I wasn't in sweatpants for these conversations. I asked him about Peters, too, because I thought what you just said. I think he's kind of done. I'm surprised that they gave him, you know, he's getting a lot of money this year. His cap hit is $11 million, $11.25 million. Excuse me, that's in 2018. It's $11.2 million this year. So it's probably his last season in the NFL, but the Eagles believe he's got one more very good last season in him. He is aging. There's no question about it. He's not the athlete he was. And around that team, they all say he's a man. He is a man, and he will still play, and we still feel totally reliable with him out there.
All right. Well, you know, they'll have Lane Johnson for the full season now, too, and then they have a did Vitae, did he get better as last year? When he was such a disaster in that first game or two.
He was. He went against Ryan Kerrigan and got Kerrigan ate his lunch all day long. Vitae got better each week after that. Carson Wentz is not as comfortable with Vitae out there as he is with Lane Johnson. And if you look at Wentz, remember in the middle of the season, he had a real prolonged slump there, and his mechanics broke down. He was not a very good quarterback in the middle of the season. He had started the season on fire, and he finished very well, and the correlation there is Lane Johnson was in the lineup when Wentz started the season, and Lane Johnson was in the lineup when Wentz finished the season. Mm-hmm. So Wentz was, he was so much more comfortable when he had Lane Johnson. He could trust his pocket. I think Vitae went in there and got destroyed, and Wentz got impacted mentally by that. But now, Gary, they have options because Vitae looked like a decent starter as a young guy developing. So they have an option there. He's their backup tackle. Lane Johnson can move over to the left side at any point. So if Jason Peters washes up in the middle of the season, which very well could happen, I mean, it could happen at any moment, they can still play. They've got they'll put Vitae in at right tackle, move Johnson to left tackle.
Yeah, and that's, of all my favorite Andy Benoit-isms from the year or so that we've been doing the show together, that was one of my favorite points you ever made about the value of the right tackle and the fact that, everyone thinks blindside, but when your right tackle is getting beat, that pressure is directly in your face, and that is, you are seeing that, you're affecting it. It's one thing if it's coming on the blind side, you don't see it, and the ball comes out before you get hit. Yeah, you get hit, and that's unfortunate. Maybe you get you get a little bit jittery as the game goes on. But if your right tackle is getting beat, you have the pressure coming right in your face, and you can't help but be affected by that.
Right, and the ball's in your hand of that same. The ball's in your right hand, so that defensive end who's beating your right tackle is also closer to the ball than the other guy. He's a strip sack away.
Yep. Just throwing some Benoit-isms back at Benoit himself. This is a very meta show right now.
You sounded very intelligent doing that, too.
I did. I memorized that verbatim. I said exactly what you said. I want to talk about a couple of team defenses here, and then I want to finish this show on the hottest take I have. Let's talk a little Colts here. So we talked about coaches a little bit last week and how you have to have patience with coaches. Chuck Pagano, he's still in Indy. He's been a guy, it seems like he's been on the hot seat forever, and it seems like he has not succeeded while on the hot seat, and yet he is still there. So they're sticking with him, and someone had asked us, and we won't have a mailbag this week, we'll have one soon, but someone asked us, well, how do you know it is time to get rid of a guy? Because we said, you can't fire a coach after 2 years. But obviously there comes a time when you say, okay, we have to fire a coach. I think one thing about guys who maybe haven't had success who have been around, you can sort of see if they're getting consistent effort from their players. I think that's a sign that you have a coach that you can stick with. And, for all the problems the Colts have had, effort hasn't been a problem. They've been a lack of talent type of team. They've been an Andrew Luck injured type of team.
But they've still gone 8-8, by the way. People think Pagano's this clown of a coach, and it's the opposite of that. They've had bad defensive players. I mean, I went through their roster last week and was astounded. I was just going through each team's roster, just kind of getting a landscape feel, and was astounded at how much worse the Colts are than the rest of the league. They have far and away the worst defense on paper right now in the NFL. And yet they still went 8-8, even though Andrew Luck's been hurt, they've had O-line issues, and their defense stinks. They've gone 8-8 the last 2 years. And before that, they were reaching the playoffs and advancing a game further each year, AFC Championship game just 3 years ago. I don't get the Chuck Pagano thing. I'm glad he's still there. I hate to say a guy should have been fired. I don't know what goes on in a building, but if it was Chuck Pagano versus Ryan Grigson, just as someone watching from afar through the glass, Chuck Pagano wins out. Ryan Grigson loses in my mind.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what Grigson happened.
Grigson is out and Chris Ballard is in. Can they do enough in one draft to sort of make this defense good enough to, let's say, they're probably not going to beat the Patriots in 2017. They probably can't get to that level. But can they be a, AFC South champion and a team that can be in that sort of, let's say, Pittsburgh, Denver, Houston, I'm forgetting some good, the Chiefs, the Raiders. Can they be in that class of team? Can they turn it around that quickly?
Anytime you have a quarterback like Andrew Luck, the answer to that question is yes. Luck is a bona fide, genuine superstar, and we could debate that. It would take a whole nother show. To football people within the NFL, I've never once heard anybody, a football person, debate that Andrew Luck's anything less than a first-class superstar. And if you have that kind of quarterback, then yes, you can compete any given Sunday, as they say.
Yeah, but the defense.
It's bad. And they're not going to be able to overhaul it in one draft. Now, the best way to, as we've talked about, kind of a running theme leading up to this draft for us, the fastest way and the best way to change the entire makeup of your defense. I think the first one is to find an edge rusher, and this draft reportedly is rich in edge rushers. And then the other way is to find a true man-to-man corner, because if you have two of those, and Vontae Davis would be your other if you're the Colts, then at least you can scheme blitzes, because most blitzes have man coverage involved. And Pagano is a very good blitz designer. That's what he did in Baltimore. That's how he likes to play. So they could find a piece or two, but they have glaring weaknesses at linebacker and safety. So whenever they're not able to be the aggressors, like first and second down, where they just line up and have to play, they're going to be at a very big disadvantage.
Yeah. The other defense I wanted to talk about is Washington. I mean, obviously, we talked a ton about Washington's offense and the Kirk Cousins situation and the fact that they lost receivers and all that. This defense, it just kind of fascinates me because they have good individual talent. You look at the defense and between, you know, Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith and they have you know, Josh Norman, and then they have some good young corners, Dunbar and Breland. It just seems like they played so far below their talent level last year. And then on top of that, they just have guys who are kind of, you know, we talked a little bit about it around free agency, you know, in Cravens and Swearinger. It's almost like you have two pretty similar safeties. It's almost like this doesn't mesh quite as well as it should.
I'm with you on that, Gary. And I think Jay Gruden might be with you too, because they changed coordinators. They fired Joe Barry and they replaced him with Greg Minuski, who was already on the staff and philosophically is not a lot different than Joe Barry. Minuski is going to be a zone-based coordinator just like Barry was. So Gruden felt like they probably had guys that weren't playing or weren't fulfilling their potential within the context of how the Redskins approached the game, to put it diplomatically. Their pieces don't fit perfectly together right now. And the one that stands out most to me, and it can solve the secondary issue, is I think they need to find someone opposite Ryan Kerrigan. They've tried. They brought in Junior Gallette. He got hurt a couple years in a row. You don't count on him now. They drafted Preston Smith. He really isn't a true edge bender. He's a good miscellaneous edge player, but he's not going to alter your pass protection rules just by where he lines up. They need a guy like that opposite Kerrigan.
Okay. All right. Do you want my hot take, Andy?
I bated breath, in fact. I want your hot take big time. Here we go.
I am proclaiming right now I'm backing off my Chicago Bears Super Bowl pick. But I am going to say the NFC Super Bowl representative for a third straight year is from the NFC South, and it is, for the third straight year, a different NFC South team. I'm picking the Bucks to go to the Super Bowl this
year. All right. All right. Very good. Very good.
Are you down with that? Do you approve?
Am I going to join you and pick the Bucks as well? Is that what you mean?
Yes, join me on the bandwagon.
I like the Bucks. I think they will be that trendy team this year. They're going to be this year's Jaguars. I'm saying preseason wise. Remember last year, everybody said Jacksonville 10-6. That's the team.
Yep.
They'll be that team this year. I did that a few years ago with the Bucks. I remember when I did the preview edition for the magazine at Sports Illustrated. I just now remember this. I picked the Bucks to win the NFC South. And in fact, you and Matt Gagné went and placed money on the Bucks because of that, you told me.
We did.
Which I'm maybe not supposed to say on this show.
No, Bucks. We did it because the Bucks were 100-1 to win the Super Bowl, which is crazy for a team that had a legitimate chance of the playoffs. So that's a good bet. That was a smart bet. That was a good investment.
Well, and the Bucks finished dead last that year, I believe, in the NFC South. Maybe the whole NFC even. They were bad. And all year long, I got people tweeting on Twitter. They'd send me pictures of my predictions from the magazine. I guess they saved the magazine. They took a picture of it, and then they'd send it to me. And they assumed I would know what they were talking about. And a lot of times they had to tell me what to look like. Why are you sending me the picture? Oh, the Bucks thing. You want me to see the Bucks pick again. So I guess I'm a little bit, I've been burned by the Bucks before. Different team now, different staff, different players. But I'm not all the way with you on it.
All right. Well, I'm just flattered that people actually keep SI around for 3 months after it's come out.
So I used to keep every single issue when I was a kid, I remember. And then when I moved to college, I had about whatever 52 issues times 10 years of your life would be at 500 magazines. And I had to, don't tell Chris Stone, but I had to throw them out.
Yeah. I mean, I used to cut out the pictures I like, but maybe it's just because I work there now, but you know, they just sort of end up in the recycling box after, you know, after a week here. But oh well, we will wrap it up with that, and we'll be back at it next week. A quick note and a sad farewell to Matt Havia, our old producer. They shuffled him. Maybe he'll be back in the future. We will see. We are back to the original 10 Things producer. That is Lou Pellegrino is once again our producer. But if you did like the show and you think it's a good show, Matt Havia had a lot to do with that. So did Lou. He did like our first three episodes last season. But Matt had been with us for a long time. We had forgotten that Lou existed until he suddenly popped in on our headsets today. But thank you to Matt Havia. But for this particular episode, we are back to thank you so much to producer Lou Pellegrino back with us. And as always, editor Chris Basil, who doesn't sleep and just edits nonstop and makes this sound so good. Thank you, as always, to all the folks over at Digital Media for helping us out here and making us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Maybe no mailbag next week, but coming up very soon, we will do a big mailbag thing, or we'll just start putting it in at the end of the show. But please send questions, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. We're both on Facebook, or you can write into talkback@themmqb.com. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. And that includes themmqb.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.